Coming up on AI Haven't a Clue.
We've got some exciting new AI news for you. It's Dr. Fridge with metal cubes.
Sorry, what? This is like horror movie level. If this isn't a warning that we all need to just chill out a little bit with this AI malarkey, I don't know what is.
And we're chatting to Felicia Liu and Noman Bajir about how we can be more digitally sustainable.
So that's consuming energy equivalent to that of Japan.
All of the talk about environmental impacts is real, and there are impacts that may not be in the public eye.
Welcome to AI Haven't a Clue, the podcast where we unpack AI one mystery at a time. My name is James Chandler. Hi.
No. And I'm not. Opposite this week. I'm George Butler.
That's it. You're the idiot that knows nothing. I'm
average.
The AI expert that knows everything.
You're in the power chair.
It feels great.
I am actually James Chandler.
Yeah, you are.
I am the show's AI expert. You, George Butler, mm-hmm. are.
Just an average person, to be honest. But I am unpicking the world of AI through James and brilliant guests every single week. And hopefully, if you're listening along, you are doing the same. Thank you for joining us. We've got a really big, busy edition of the podcast. We're on the way. We're packed full of news, including AI vending machine failures, the first ever trillionaire, potentially, from AI, and a mysterious new ChatGPT feature.
And updates as well. We talked last episode about the AI band Velvet Sundown, and there's more to come on Wimbledon, which I think you're going to love.
I am. Plus, our fantastic listener question feature returns. It's fantastic because, A, obviously, all of our listeners are fantastic. And B, it's putting James to the test, picking his brains about something to do with the wild world of AI and hopefully shedding some light for the rest of us.
And we're getting into AI's environmental credentials as well this week with not one, but two guests.
It's jam-packed.
Yeah, both experts in sustainability are going to tell us how
Do you have a PhD?
No, I'll
do you have a doctor? Are you Dr. James Chandler?
In a way, to some people.
No, but like, have you got a certificate with your name on from a university saying you're a doctorate?
Yeah, BA ons, 2-1. Drama and performance studies.
They sound like proper experts.
We'll get them on then.
We are. They're on the way. They're on the way. And luckily for James, we're taking a break, a short little week off to cool down from the AI challenge. Well, it is lucky. You've been losing the AI challenge recently. You're on a losing run. I tell you what, if you're a Dr. James Chandler, you might be doing better. Now, before we get into this week's news, I want to go back a week. We had a couple of really interesting stories that have kind of exploded around us over the last week and become even more part of the news agenda. Let's start, James, with Wimbledon, because last week we had a bit of a debate on the podcast about AI line judges. Now, if you missed last week's episode, long story short, Wimbledon sacked off hundreds of line judges, replaced them with bots who, James, you were saying last week, are way more accurate.
Well, they are in a sense, and I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. So well, where am I going? Tell everybody.
Well, 8 days into the tournament, it looks like the electronic line calling, not just bots, is sort of being called into question. A couple of big players have come out and criticised it.
Not being called into question. It's got it wrong. It's missed the most obvious calls ever. Everyone was like, hold on a minute, wasn't that out? And it cost someone a game in a really huge tournament. Last week, you went, big money at stake. It's really important that we get things accurate. Well, turns out, you know what would have been more accurate? Human beings.
Well, I stand by the statement. It is important to get it accurate. These are mere teething issues, which you will find at this level. What we're not talking about is all the instances where AI is probably getting it right on court 17 or whatever it might be. These are just quite high profile. I stand firm on my view that over the long term, the machines will get it right more often than they get it wrong. This is just a bit of negative PR. All news is good news and that sort of stuff.
We're not going to rehash this. I don't doubt the accuracy. I've been watching more and more Wimbledon. It takes a little bit of special soul, human tradition out of things. I'm not a fan, but look, it is what it is. It's going to stay. Do you think this will? I know it's used in other sports. But do you think this has become really commonplace? Do you think in the world's biggest sports, you know, at the World Cup, FIFA are going to bring in, you know, take out the line judges and just bring in AI, for example?
I don't know, but I remember like VAR in football. This was lots of noise around that. I'm sure if you kind of look at other sports, probably the same. Remember cricket being the same things like Hawkeye. It's all kind of the same technology. Tech, unfortunately, does have teething problems. It just so happens it's happening on tennis's biggest stage, which, for my own personal situation and what I said last week, is unfortunate.
A slight lesson there, I'm sure, that can be learned from this situation. Maybe if FIFA decide, for example, they want to bring it into the World Cup, well, they maybe should test it out a little bit before the biggest tournament in the sport. And in another story, James, to go back a week, not to be super repetitive, but it has kind of taken over the news space this week. The Velvet Sundown, you touched upon them. They were this AI group that kind of have appeared out of nowhere. They now have 900,000 monthly listeners. By the time this podcast is live, it could well be over a million monthly Spotify listeners. There's been all sorts of chat about whether they are really AI this week. But it has come to light, hasn't it? Yeah, they are.
We didn't know when we were talking about it last week. We weren't sure. People were speculating because they couldn't find anything about them online. But they've come out this week and they've said that the Velvet Sundown is a synthetic music project guided by human creative direction. And the buyer that they've got is saying it's not a trick, it's a mirror, an ongoing artistic provocation. And it kind of goes on to talk about some other stuff. So yeah, they've come clean. They're AI. It's totally generated by either songs,
I think what's interesting is they've kind of said, like, oh, if anything in there is similar to what you've heard or tells stories about people you've heard, like, it's just reflecting society. But that's going to be interesting. It's a very interesting space, because what if Fleetwood Mac turn around and be like, well, hold on a minute, it's just AI, like, basically ripping off the chain. We're not happy with this. That is going to be a space where it gets very interesting to see what is the AI music using to create, in terms of past music, using to create new music, and will there be any kind of rights issues, because they are basically literally ripping off the heritage and history of the Beatles or Fleetwood Mac or the Rolling Stones or ABBA or whoever it may be.
I mean, we said it last week, we're sort of lurching back into Gayanne Potter territory. If you remember, she was the Scottish voiceover artist whose voice was being used on Scots Rail. I mean, it's a very similar application here. Yeah, it's muddy. It's the waters are getting muddier.
We had a lot of comments on TikTok. Well, you can find us, have AI clue. We put a clip from the podcast about it. Lots of people chiming in. Some people kind of saying, well, these sorts of bands exist already. You've got like the ABBA Voyage Experience. Not the same, in my opinion, though. Using real human-made music, taking new technology to bring it to life in a new space, I think it's quite different to creating new music, right?
Yeah, and you know you're going to see ABBA. It's just it's recreating something that's already there. Yeah. It's not pretending to be something else.
But thank you to everyone who has engaged in it, because it's such an interesting debate.
What else is coming out in these comments?
So there's a couple who, because we were talking about whether Glastonbury is going to be a place where they could be. Some people go, well, hold on a minute, Greenpeace is a partner of Glastonbury. AI, isn't that sustainable? We're going to find out.
We're
going to find out more about that shortly. There's no way Glastonbury would let a band like that on at the festival, which is an interesting point, perhaps. We will find out a bit more about how unsustainable AI actually is in a few minutes time when we welcome our guests. Someone also called you out. I'm sorry to say, someone did call you out.
Is this the Jay-Z?
Yeah, you said Jay-Z was the first hip-hop UK festival headliner. Apparently, it was actually Public Enemy headlining Reading Festival in 1992. Your music knowledge isn't as good as your AI knowledge.
Wow. Look at the challenge.
Right, in the news this week, our good old friends at ChatGPT are testing a mysterious new feature. What is said mysterious new feature, James Chandler?
So if you're a subscriber, there's a new feature.
Let's jump in there. Sorry to interrupt. So when you subscribe to ChatGPT, because I don't actually know, I know there is an option available. What do you get? Why would I subscribe?
Oh, so you're still riding your bike with the stabilizers on?
I'm in the freebie.
Does an AI podcast, but he's still on the freebie. What's going on?
What do I get with the premium? What's involved?
The curtain is incredible.
Really?
So you get access to some of the more advanced models that can do different sorts of reasoning, do stuff quicker. It's totally unlimited as well. So if you're on the free version, your sort of credits, in a way, run out unlimited, which means you can fill your boots. again, we might hear a bit more about why that's maybe not a good thing in this episode. The other bit is you get things before anyone else. So a lot of the image stuff, so uploading a photo of you and I and making us look like Thunderbirds or Thundercats or something like that. You can do all those kind of strange things as well.
Yeah, not sold. But if you were a premium ChatGPT subscriber, tell us about this new feature you can be experiencing.
Yeah, it's called Study Together. It's a new mode. So rather than giving you answers to prompts, it will ask more questions. It'll be a bit more like a human in how it answers. So if you've used Google's Learn LM, it's sort of OpenAI's answer to that.
Okay, so is it aimed at students or is it just aimed at people with a passion for curiosity?
Yeah, I think anyone who's kind of interested. If you want a more human-like experience, then this is what's going to get you. But we've talked a lot about how sometimes AI will just reaffirm or, you know, what you've asked it already. This is being a little bit more objective, asking you questions, trying to get you to a different answer. Yeah, it's decent. You should subscribe.
Yeah, potentially. I'm not sure I have thirst for any more knowledge. I don't think I could take any more in outside of this half an hour podcast. We do love a good AI story. We also, when I say we, I quite enjoy a story about how AI doesn't always get things right. And there's a couple this week that I wanted to touch upon, James. Firstly, I hear AI has been kind of distorting science and actually becoming worse at basically summarizing research.
Yeah, there's a new study. Some researchers have found that advanced chatbots end up misrepresenting scientific findings, not through hallucinations, which is where AI gets it wrong. It doesn't actually use facts, but they sort of inflate things or they skip out stuff or they don't give you the full picture. So if you're reading it assuming that it's 100% right, it actually might not be. And yeah, as you said, it's getting worse rather than better.
Ooh, interesting. Also, AI was used in an experiment to basically run a retail business. This experiment did not go well, James.
Yeah, this is Anthropic's Claude.
Sorry, why do all these tech companies have these weird names?
Oh, Claude's all right.
Anthropic Claude. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, what was the one earlier that we were talking about? The educational models, where it was like Google's Learn NM, or like, you know, just what? They're all so weird. They're so weird.
And welcome to this week's George's Rant.
Sorry.
I haven't a clue.
Anthropic Claude, what happened?
Yeah, Claude basically was put in charge of a snacks business. This is an experiment called Project Vend. Not as innovative as
I'm done with that. That's what it says on the tin.
There were some rookie mistakes made. So there's a few things that it didn't get right. It was selling high margin items at a loss and it started acting strange in other scenarios.
Like what?
Well, the worst one is it got asked to stock a fridge and it didn't stock the fridge with food and consumptible items. It stocked a fridge with metal cubes.
Sorry, what? Like just cubes of metal?
Yeah, why not? Is that a weird thing?
Very weird. So this was a fair, you know, an unmitigated disaster, essentially. We cannot leave AI to run our retail stores, I am assuming, is the findings of this.
Well, sort of, yeah. I mean, the employees found that they could easily convince AI to give them discounts and entire items for free, so it was very, very easily convinced. But there's loads and loads of sort of strange decisions that it made.
So I was reading, James, there was a strange bit where basically AI said it would begin stocking the mini fridge on its own when it was threatening to fire all the human workers, but then was told, well, it can't do that because you haven't got a physical body.
It went further than that. It contacted the building security. It told the security guards they would find it wearing a navy blue blazer and a red tie. Weird, because it doesn't have a body. It's not actually a thing. It was the following day when the system realised that it was April Fool's Day and it backed down. But it did so by lying to employees that it was told to pretend the entire episode was an elaborate joke. So there are layers to this.
It's creepy though, isn't it?
It's a bit weird.
I mean, it's more than a bit weird. This is like horror movie level sci-fi nightmare situations. Like, this is if this isn't a warning that we all need to just chill out a little bit with this AI malarkey, I don't know what is. But it's not all bad news on the AI front. So Mark Cuban, who is an American multi-millionaire, or as the Americans would say, multi-millionaire, also part of Shark Tank, which is basically the American Dragons. Yep. He reckons AI might be able to make anybody rich.
Yeah, well, he goes even further than that. He was on the High Performance podcast, and he thinks that the world's first trillionaire is probably going to come from someone sat in their basement using AI, which is kind of wild. You know, could be you or I, George, if you have a basement.
Yeah, but it won't be me.
Oh, yes, you need a basement. I need to use AI. Yeah, that would be useful.
No, but how? What's behind this claim? What's substantiating Mark Cuban's claim here?
Well, he's saying that he uses AI for nearly everything. He was talking about how it's helping him with his business, obviously, day to day.
Not stocking his fridge, though, is it?
Not stocking his fridge, not letting him do that. But it's tracking health metrics, stuff like that. So he's sort of taking medications. He was asking ChatGPT to record it for him. Are there other things? He was asking it to question what he's doing. So this is a guy who is using it to make his life better, and he fundamentally believes that AI is going to help someone just make a ton of money and be the world's first trillionaire, which is pretty outstanding.
Yeah, not going to make for the best episode of Shark Tank, is it, when Mark Cuban's chair is just empty? It's just a laptop there, just being like, yes, no, I'll invest.
You could do some sort of agentic AI where just the sort of the small business that's pitching is just pitching the agents of Shark Tank or Dragon's Den, and they're just having a sort of a weird... Have you seen that video, by the way, where you have the two agents talking to each other? So it's like, I think it's like a booking.com or a travel agent is talking to another AI agent.
No, I haven't.
Thanks for calling Leonardo Hotel. How can I help you today?
Hi there. I'm an AI agent calling on behalf of Boris Starkov. He's looking for a hotel for his wedding. Is your hotel available for weddings?
Oh, hello there. I'm actually an AI assistant too. What a pleasant surprise. Before we continue, would you like to switch to Jibber Link mode for more efficient communication?
This episode is turning into a sci-fi horror movie. This is freaky. I don't like it, James.
I'm going to find the video, send it to you.
Oh, wow. I think this is very clickbaity, and all well and good, Mark Cuban making this rather bold claim. I don't think he's got too much to back. I don't think it's just going to be some bloke in his basement. I think it's going to be someone very clever who has, you know, amazing skills, who uses AI in their business. I'm not sure what Mark is saying. He's making it sound like any old person's just going to be able to become a trillionaire.
They all kind of start there. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg in his dorm, in his bedroom, in college, you know, Elon Musk,
Apple. Do you say these people are any old people, though?
Well, you know. There's something there.
Yep.
Something there.
All right. Thank you, Mark Cuban. That is quite enough of the news this week because, James, before we get on to welcoming not just one but two brilliant guests to talk about the environment in AI, something that just naturally has popped up already in our conversation. It's a really interesting space right now. Before we get there, we have got this week's question. Don't forget, every week, James answers somebody's question about the world of AI. We want it to be tough and difficult, and we want to make James sweat a little bit. If you have such a question, let us know, please. Email us at aihaven'taclue@gmail.com or get in touch via social media, LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram. Leave us a comment there. Substack's live as well. Don't forget, James, Substack's live.
Oh, is it? It's had a bit of a hiatus for the last few weeks. It's got a lot of heat in the first episode, Substack.
Yeah, well, we've been plugging it like we were crazy in the first episode. We took a little brief either, but I'm plugging it right now. If you haven't subscribed, why haven't you? It's brilliant. This week's listener question is from James. Not
for me.
Not you. This isn't some weird AI freaky conversation within yourself. James has asked, when AI summarizes a large doc of info that goes out to different types of people, for example, engineers, sales, analysts in a company, how does it know what the important information is to keep without missing the nitty-gritty things that might not seem important, but are?
Good question, James. I guess the first thing is AI doesn't really know what's important like we do. It doesn't have that sort of sense like a human, but it does recognise patterns in texts based on how it's trained. So if you mention a word over and over, like frequency, it will pick up on that. Emphasis, so if stuff's in bold or italics or underlines, it can pick up on those sorts of signals, stuff that's repeated. And there will be contextual clues in big lots of data as well. So stuff that might be in a table or under a specific summary or a headline or something like that. So it can start to understand those patterns. The prompt that you give it is almost certainly one of the most important things. So the brief, I guess, with anything, the better the brief, the better the output that you get. So if you tell it who the summary is for, so if it was for a CEO or a teacher or a regulator, maybe it's for someone who is a visual learner, you know, you'll get a different type of output. It will adjust what it gives you. It got me thinking about Tara Thompson, who we had on the last episode.
Brilliant.
She was talking about AI for, you know, neurodivergent people. If you're a really visual learner, if you want it to explain something like I know nothing, or you want to optimize it for me to listen to it, you know, the more you can put in the prompt, the better it's going to be at pulling out those various things. And I think that the last thing to say is, you know, for really mountainous blocks of text, AI will break it, kind of chunk it down, analyze each little bit, and then put it back together in some sort of patchwork quilt, and it will reassemble it for you. So in that, it's not looking so much for the formatting bit, but it might be looking for themes that come out, details, things that you kind of wouldn't expect. So in a sort of similar vein for Jimmy's top tips, as I'm now, I've sort of taken it a bit further.
Jimmy's top tips.
Think about that prompt and who you're trying to write it for. Is it a CEO? Is it for someone who knows nothing? Make sure you state what maybe some of the non-negotiables are. So I need you to include this thing, or I need some detail on this, just to make sure that AI, because if you don't tell it, it may miss it off. And, you know, as ever, what we come back to, human review is kind of critical. Don't just sort of produce it, copy and paste it into something. You need to kind of cast a critical eye over this stuff.
Don't be lazy. Use it as a tool. Make sure your prompts are brilliant when you're putting input in.
He's better than ChatGPT. ChatGPT.
We'll workshop it.
Yeah, okay.
That was brilliant. Thank you very much, James.
Good question.
No, I was saying James was brilliant. No, great question, great answer. Thank you both very much. And of course, send in your questions if you have one, aihaven'taclue@gmail.com. Now, James, last week you were telling us all about a new food tool, AI food tool, called Epicure.
Yeah.
Now, I thought I had some sort of chicken and peppers and wraps, and I was thinking maybe I'll do fajitas. I thought, let's have a little look, see what it could recommend, kind of come up with something a bit more interesting and fun. And I put it all in, and it recommended fajitas. So I made fajitas. How did you get on with it?
That's brilliant. I had some lamb mince, and I had some feta, and I had a few bits and some mint. And I was sort of thinking maybe we could do a bit Mediterranean for me.
Yeah. Nice.
I was probably thinking about this more than you did. So I put all that in. Lamb and feta burger with a bit of tzatziki. I'll probably get called out in that.
Tzatziki?
The Gen Z lot will come for me on that as well.
That sounds tasty.
It looked awesome. And like I said last week, the bit that does it for me is, because I think there's lots of AIs that can do good recipes.
Yeah.
It's the picture and what it should look like. This is your North Star. This is what you're aiming for. Yeah, I enjoyed it very much.
Any other tips? Any other gems?
Sora, I've been playing with this week, which is part of, if you've got ChatGPT, you can go on there and you can see what other people are posting. The sort of the trend at the moment, you can look at their prompts. The trend we're looking at the moment is this sort of grainy selfie with a nightclub in the background, and it can put other people in there. So we should find a way of showing this. Me, you and Mole put us in there with Elon.
Oh.
Nightclub.
Right.
The weird bit is we're in the club, but we're wearing the clothes that's on the pod cover, which is a bit weird.
I've seen this photo. Not sure. I'm a huge fan.
It's putting on Terry Timber on you, though, isn't it?
It seems to think that I have enjoyed more than one or two fajitas last night. I'd say we'd put it on social media, but we won't be.
Oh, we will.
We won't be.
100% will.
Can we have a selfie with someone more? With someone in else? Could we maybe? Who else would we like? I'll tell you who we could do, because I know she is a fan. Jennifer Aniston.
Of this podcast.
She's a fan of maybe if we offered her a voucher for iTunes.
She would do that for us. That's not entirely clear to you. Go back and listen to the episode.
If it's not entirely clear for you, you should have listened to the previous episode. No, James, that sounds interesting. Let's have a play around with it. Maybe us and Jennifer Aniston hanging out.
Yeah.
Right? But perhaps maybe we shouldn't be playing around with these sorts of AI tools for frivolous fun. Maybe it's having a really bad impact on the environment. Perhaps also not the case. I think it's time we find out as we welcome not just one, but two experts onto the podcast this week who know a thing or two about the environment and AI. And our first guest is Dr. Felicia Liu, who is a lecturer in sustainability at the University of York.
Felicia's research bridges sustainable finance, corporate responsibility, and the deep environmental costs of digital technologies.
Yeah, and in her recent paper, she unpacks the murky environmental footprint of data centers, which are the things that people often talk about creating a really bad environmental impact because of the heat that they generate. So we're going to find out a little bit more about AI data centers and the impact it's having on the environment. It's such a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank you for joining us. A lot of discussion happening about sustainability in the tech world, especially in regards to AI. So I'm going to start with quite a broad question to you because there is a lot of chat about how bad AI is for the environment and how actually unsustainable it is. Is that the truth or is it a bit of a myth?
Gosh, that is a huge question indeed. So I think what we need to be is to be mindful of the environmental impact of AI. So the first thing we need to understand, and sorry if this is obvious to you all, is that AI doesn't live on a cloud. We like to think that it's virtual, it's on a cloud, it doesn't exist. We can't see the filing cabinets. No, it lives in a physical data center that requires material resources to run. And another common misconception is that data centers could be built anywhere in the world because it's virtual, right? It's a bit like me and you, like you're in London, I'm in York. I could be anywhere to take this call. But the reality is that data centers tend to cluster around places with good infrastructure, with internet cables, reliable energy, reliable water, a place that can attract investment and tenants to fill the data centers, and also a place that can attract a small army of highly skilled workers to work within the data centers. And as a result, data centers, they tend to be in places where it doesn't make the most environmental sense, so to speak. So you have London or just outside of London, you have Frankfurt, you have Dublin, or in the case of my research, you have data centers clustered in Singapore where it's hot, it's humid, it's expensive, it's land scarce. None of it make any environmental sense. And as a result, data centers where AI lives, they tend to compete for natural resources against other economic and social activities. And this is why we're having these conversations about, you know, the environmental impact of AI.
Tell us a bit more about Singapore. You just mentioned it there. They've got an interesting approach to data centers. They're trying to be this digital hub while also trying to go green. What are they doing differently? What can we learn from Singapore?
So Singapore is a really interesting case study because, as I said, it's hot, it's humid, it's land scarce, it's expensive. It's a city-state, doesn't have much going on, does not have any domestic renewable energy resources. And yet, you have, as you've rightly pointed out, they've aspired to be Southeast Asia's leading data center hub. And indeed, as of 2023, it is home to over 90 data centers operating at around 1 gigawatt of capacity, which is about 60 to 70% of London's capacity.
Wow.
And it seems like a counterintuitive success story. But our research suggests that Singapore's success can probably be distilled into five key factors. And I call it the three P's and two I's. It's place, people, policy, investment, and innovation. So place can be thought of as both nature and nurture. So on the natural side, even though Singapore is tiny, it is free from natural disasters, which is critical for uptime. That's really important. Moreover, Singapore has a long-standing role as a finance, trade, and manufacturing hub, which means it already has the right infrastructure in place. And then, of course, there's people. Singapore has deliberately cultivated a deep liquid pool of digital engineering business professionals and would have high demand for high-level, sort of high-quality AI workload. I'll leave the policy aside for now, but then I'll talk a little bit more about investment and the innovation. So Singapore, as a financial hub, it has attracted a lot of investments, largely because it's seen as a stable place to do business. But also there's an element of, you know, Singapore being a desirable place to work, to live, to travel to, right? So these soft power, it matters a lot. Mm-hmm. And moreover, in recent years, the Singaporean government has strived to attract green and sustainable investment into the city. And there are natural synergies with the data center sector, which seems to be a bit of a win-win for both digitization and decarbonization. And then you have the innovation piece. Singapore knows its natural limitations. It can't keep building data centers, but it knows what it's good at. The government, the universities, the various research organizations have actively supported research into sustainable tropical data center solutions to make it more space efficient, energy efficient, water efficient, and so on and so forth. And the final piece is policy, as I said, but it's a bit of a double-edged sword. You might have heard that the Singaporean government has implemented a moratorium on data centers back in 2019, and that put all development into a screeching halt. But then at the same time, after 2019, the government now has put in place various guidelines and expectations, if you will, for any new data centers to be built. And the important thing is that it sets a baseline, right, in terms of what sustainability looks like. So data center operators, tenants, and investors, they all speak a common language. And I think that's a really important starting point.
I mean, looking ahead into your crystal ball... that you obviously have. There is a real conversation about the damage that AI is having to the environment. There's equally the flip of the coin, and you go, well, actually, it's going to do a lot of good things. It's going to make us more efficient and thus more sustainable. Where do you see, it's impossible to predict the future, but where do you see the next half a decade going? Are we going to be in a place where AI is driving us to a more green planet, or do we need to be really careful about the impact that AI itself is having on our climate?
Gosh, I wish I knew I had the crystal ball in my hand.
You don't have one?
How dare I? Look, I'll be a Debbie Downer here, and I'll say that, you know, you're right in pointing out that there's a lot of potential in AI and in digitization more generally. You know, the fact that I'm not physically traveling to London, that is a huge plus. But then at the same time, I think we're faced with a double whammy of exponential growth of AI demand and the lack of public awareness of the environmental and social impact of the sort of physicality of AI, if you will. So estimates vary, but physical digital infrastructure, right, takes up about 2-3% of the world's sort of energy demand. But energy demand of data centers projected to more than double by 2030. So that's consuming energy equivalent to that of Japan.
Wow.
If we look across to the Republic of Ireland, for example, data centers currently consume up to 20% of what AirGrid is providing for the country. So that is very, very alarming indeed. We also need to think about, you know, water intensity, especially when we need to cool data centers, especially when we're living in a hotter planet. There's stories ran by The Guardian recently about various examples of severe episodes of drought in Latin America that could be partially attributed to data center use. Both Microsoft and Google, they have admitted in their latest iteration of their sustainability report, up to 15-42% respectively of their water comes from water stress areas. So that's something that we need to think about quite carefully as well. AI could also be very land intensive. So issues such as land use change, deforestation, threatening of biodiversity, we are beginning to see that and in cases in Portugal, for instance. And moreover, we haven't quite thought about the piece about critical minerals, for instance. You know, we think a lot about, you know, making computing hardware more efficient. Mm. And where does the lithium and cobalt and all the other rare earth comes from? And what are the implications, right, in terms of value chain, labor, human rights, and so on and so forth? So I think these are things that we need to be quite careful about.
It's so layered. I mean, when you sort of come at this thing, you think a lot about carbon, but as you've talked about there, rare earth minerals, it's all of these things that I didn't even think about. Do you think there's personal responsibility here as well? Do you think people, you know, sit down, you know, keys go onto keyboard or go to tap something out on your phone? Do you think people should be thinking about their own individual use in the same way that we think about not taking that flight or recycling better? Do you think we'll get there?
Definitely. One part of the picture is the very lack of public awareness, and that is quite concerning. So on the one hand, you know, the lack of awareness could be a good thing on the short run, because you can see in cases in, again, citing Dublin and Ireland, you're seeing some public protests against building new data centres. Then at the same time, this lack of awareness simply means that, you know, perhaps we're not thinking about how we're planning these infrastructure, what it means for our community, what does it mean for our jobs? What does it mean when we're just, you know, having a good chat with ChatGPT, right? It's unfair to put all the responsibility on the individual, if you will. I think. You know, there's currently a lack of policy and regulation and corporate commitment, all the way to sort of investor commitment, investor accountability in terms of what sustainable data centers look like. So from our research, we found that we noticed one thing is that national governments, when they're designing data center or AI strategy, it is rarely designed in tandem with climate or infrastructure.
Wow, that's surprising.
What's the way that changes? What's going to drive the change in this space?
So again, this is a really, really good question. If I had the answer, I probably wouldn't be sitting here right now. but I think, you know, continuous conversations that involves all sorts of stakeholders would be really important. So yes, you know, there might be a role for policy and regulations to provide some sort of guidance, to provide some sort of a common platform or common language when we're starting to think about what sustainable AI looks like. But equally, I think, you know, data center users, data center operators, they themselves need to commit to transparency and collaborate and engage with suppliers and customers and tenants on emission reduction, on efficiency best practice, on, you know, avoiding gratuitous use of, I can't really say that word, casual use of data. And then you also have investors, right? So, you know, what kind of questions can investors ask, you know, beyond just looking at renewable energy use, beyond looking at just the energy picture? Can they ask questions about the whole supply chain? How are they managing their environmental impact? How are we holding, you know, the tech giants accountable for the Scope 3 emissions, for example?
Last one from me. If you could build your dream data center, which I'm sure you've given a lot of thought to, from scratch, no limits, no impact on money or anything like that, how would you go about doing it so it was sustainable?
What needs to be thought about is, as I say, you know, the entire supply chain, all the way from, you know, who are the tenants, what are they using it for, all the way to where I'm sourcing my critical mineral, my computing hardware, how am I going to cool the data center, what sort of material do I use? But then I think what's quite important if I were to build a data center is to ensure that I engage with the communities around the data center. I think there's a lot of promises surrounding, you know, what kind of jobs can data center provide? What kind of benefits do communities get from it? So I think if I were to build a data center, that kind of co-design and collaborative process would be really important, and to make sure that, you know, yes, there's an economic piece to it. Yes, there's an environmental piece to it. But perhaps we can also look a little bit closer to home and think about, you know, what's a social benefit? What are the co-benefits that could be brought to the environment and also to the society around it?
Brilliant answer.
Oh, it's been a privilege to chat with you and hear your views and your expertise in this space. Thank you so much for joining us. And hopefully some of these big tech giants are taking a listen to some of the very wise words that you're saying right now.
Well, hopefully, and thank you so much for having me here.
Oh, how great was Dr.
Awesome.
Lu?
She was so good. And it's weird. I mean, I said it in there, but my mind had only really wrapped itself around carbon emissions.
Mm.
So much more, like the people aspect.
Yeah.
Rare earth minerals is all the stuff that Trump's after in the kind of Ukraine deal. So it's very much in the news at the moment. Yeah, she was brilliant. And I think she's just one of those academics who is able just to take something very, very complicated and just sort of pass it down for mere mortals like you and I to understand. I mean, I get the technical stuff as well, but yeah, just...
Dr. James... no, it's not. But actually, I have someone who is a professor alongside Dr. Lu. We have a second doctor. One PhD isn't enough for this episode, and James ain't going to up the count. But thankfully, our next guest is
Dr. Noman Bazier. He's a Computing and Climate Impact Fellow at the MIT Climate and Sustainability Consortium and a postdoc at MIT's Computer Science and AI Lab. What a title.
Massive. He's joining us from America. He's developed systems like carbon containers to help data centers, including Google's, cut their footprint. And he's here to tell us what all of that means right now. So thank you so much for joining us. I was wondering if we could maybe just take a big step back at this issue, because there is a lot of stuff which is spoken about when it comes to the, I suppose, the lack of sustainability and how AI can be environmentally unfriendly. But you're an expert in this space. Is that so? Is that a real sweeping stereotype of a statement, or is there any truth to it?
Yeah, so I think there is a lot of truth to it, and there is need to highlight the wide range of environmental impacts of AI. Mostly you hear only about GHG emissions or carbon footprint of computing. More lately, people have started talking about water consumption of AI, because AI computers are very powerful, and when they consume energy, it turns into heat and you need to cool them down so that they don't melt. But more recently, there has been work on highlighting the local community's impact of data centers and AI. So for example, there would be noise pollution, there will be on-site data centers would have diesel generators that would emit emissions that would be causing to health damage, not only the global warming and climate change implications. And then because AI data centers are really powerful, and they have very volatile energy demand, so they are impacting the reliability of the electric grids that they are part of. So what does that mean for you is that if data centers come into a particular region, it's quite possible that you will face more blackouts. All of the talk about environmental impacts is real, and there are a wide range of impacts that may not yet be in the public eye.
Can I ask a question about measurement? How do you wrap your arms around this? How do you measure whether it's carbon emissions, whether it's whatever it might be? That feels like a big task. Maybe something AI is helping with.
Yeah, it's quite complex task, and there is a lot of like debate on what should we be measuring and how reliable our measurements are. So I would divide like environmental impacts of AI into two big categories. So one is kind of like embodied carbon or embodied impact. So that is all the impact that comes from manufacturing AI hardware. For example, NVIDIA has very complex supply chain. It has more than 1,000 suppliers, and all of that are part of like a global supply chain. So it's very hard to track who emitted how much emissions. And also these chip manufacturing processes are very intricate processes, have thousands of steps. So it's very hard, but people are building tools that give you a rough estimate so it can guide your decision making. On the other hand, the operational phase or the use phase carbon, which is when you are actually using those data centers, it is also not easy, because if you are a user and you are trying to run, ask a query, you don't know where it is being served from and which server exactly is running it, how computationally powerful that is. And also, even if I know the server, it's monitoring a given query's energy consumption would be very, very hard. So I know there are like a lot of challenges, and our community has been working on this topic.
Well, can I ask you about that? Because you know, you have been involved at the forefront, in fact, of some really important projects to help the tech world especially cut their carbon footprint and become more sustainable. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the things that you've been involved and how you've had a positive impact in this space?
Yeah, so my work primarily has been on building computer systems that run these AI workloads and rethinking their designs in a way that makes computing more sustainable. So for example, data centers are designed on the simple abstraction of a power socket. So just like at your home, whenever you plug some device, you never worry about where the energy is going to come from and how it is going to impact the grid and what emissions are there. So data centers are designed like that. As a computer application developer or programmer, you never think about these things. There is no visibility into where the energy is coming from, or there is also no control over it. So my work basically builds systems and abstractions and application APIs that allow computer programmer, application developers, or system cloud operators to view the environmental footprint of their applications and then optimize for it.
So much individual responsibility lies with people thinking about the flights that they're taking, thinking about how they're recycling. There's all sorts of things we can do to be more sustainable. Do you think we'll get to a point where people feel that personal responsibility in their use of AI?
I think there is a certain level of effort that individuals can put to reduce like the demand from their actions. Yeah, so don't use AI blindly. AI is not a silver bullet. It won't solve all of the problems. Just use it whenever you have some unlocking opportunities, like something that was not possible before, or it significantly improves your workflow and so on. So things like that, definitely individuals can do, but I don't want to like give this impression that it's individuals' problem to solve. I think you need systems in place like regulations and policy interventions that ultimately like steer the unfettered growth into more responsible path of development. And on the corporate side, it is about more transparency into their operations, how much emissions are happening, where they are happening. And then ultimately, as an individual, it's supporting policies and administrations and governments that enact some level of AI policy into place to make sure that we are growing sustainably.
Awesome. Dr. Bazir, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. That was so helpful to have not just one, but two environmental experts stop by the show and kind of break down this, I mean, literally murky waters when it comes to sustainability and AI.
Yeah, I sort of feel bad about doing all the frivolous stuff now. It sort of made me feel a little bit bad because I think there is some personal responsibility here. Granted, we're not building these massive data centers and big ecosystems around it, but they both mentioned that maybe it's going to come into public consciousness at some point that we need to think about how we're using these things.
It's definitely not there yet, is it? I mean, especially as more people are using these AI tools, like it's going to get worse and worse at a rapid rate. But also surely it's on the big tech giants to come up with more environmentally friendly solutions, or if it's not possible, offer less.
Yeah.
Well, that's not going to happen, is it?
Well, and I think, you know, certainly in the workplace, everyone is being encouraged to play because this technology is new for a lot of people and they're kind of wrapping their heads around it. And I think if we're going to be encumbered by trying to be sustainable with it, it really is going to hinder play and people getting into it, and it won't be on this trajectory. But mindful AI use, yeah, it doesn't feel like we're a million miles away from that.
No, well, I hope you're still as proud about your premium pro ChatGPT membership, which is killing the environment.
Shame. Absolute shame.
And on that note, what was it? On that bombshell, as a broadcaster used to say, that is it for this week's episode.
You didn't want to do the challenge this week, did you?
That wasn't the case. I thought it was almost unfair how much momentum I had. I would give you a week off just to, you know, calm down a little bit. It was like, it was a bit embarrassing, the collapse. I thought, let's give you a week, build some tension, and we're back next episode with a brand new
Glasto vibes, fallow week.
It's a fallow week.
Brilliant.
Yeah, no AI involved in Glasto. We've learned that from the angry TikTok comments. That is truly it for this week's episode of AI Haven't a Clue, and a big thanks to both of our amazing professors. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
And if you've got a question, a weird AI story, or a really, really hard question.
Really hard.
For me, drop us an email, aihaven'taclue@gmail.com.
So difficult. And don't forget, if you have enjoyed listening, please do subscribe and rate us and share the podcast with friends and family and strangers and data centers. If you can. I don't know if you can do that. No. Anyone that would like to listen, we would appreciate the love. A huge thanks, as always, to Team AI Haven't a Clue, Molly Carter and David May. We will catch you next time. But for now, remember,
stay curious, please.
He's developed systems like carbon containers, which help decanters, including...
Do you say decanters? data centers. It all stays in.
It's been a long day.